refer to riders. They're dragons, I say out loud in the empty library. Dane, I should tell... No, he'll act only on the rules, not taking the ethics into account. There's only one person I trust to always do the right thing. I stuff my things into my pack, sling it over my shoulders, and race out of the library, then climb 4 flights of stairs. My heart races as I knock on Rhiannon's door. Hey, she says when she opens the door, her bright smile faltering when I don't return it. Without another word, she steps back, ushering me into her room. I glance at the Spartan decor as I start to pace the length of the room, taking in 2 plain desks, 2 doorless armoires, and 2 beds with simple black sheets that have been awkwardly shoved into a space obviously meant for 1. The result of the flyer's arrival. A single window illuminates the room with morning light. We're due in formation shortly. That one is supposed to be yours, Rhys says, gesturing to the bed on the right, just in case you ever want a night away from Ryerson. I press my lips between my teeth, searching for the right words as I wear a path in Rhiannon's floor. I need to tell you something. All right? Stopping suddenly in the middle of the room, I turn toward her. I know how to raise the wards. I'm just not entirely sure we should. An excerpt from The Journal of Warwick Luceris, translated by cadets Violet Sorengale and Dane Atos. The breath of life of the 6 and the 1 combined and set the stone ablaze in an iron flame. Chapter 52. Rhiannon slides a mug of warm apple cider across her sister's dining room table the next day, then takes the empty seat between Riddick and Sloane. The house has the same scent as most of the barracks in Ryerson House, newly cut wood and a faint hint of stain. The carpenters have been working around the clock to turn out serviceable furniture. I refuse to believe that it could all go up in flames if those dark wielders decide to test their wyvern at altitude. 4 hours. That's all it would take for them to reach us from Draithus. Thanks. I take the mug and lift it to my face, breathing in the comforting scent before drinking. Looking over my mug, into the connected living room of the townhouse, I smile at the sight of Sawyer sitting with Jacinia on a blanket near the fire. An intense look of concentration on his face as he signs. Shit. He might have just told her that he thinks her turtle is blue, but I'm not getting in the middle of that. It's the second time this week Reagan has opened her home to our squad at Ree's request, and the first time Jacinia's joined us. I have to give it to Ree. Her idea was genius. Getting our entire squad, 18 of us, together outside the academic setting of Ryerson House hasn't solved the tension between riders and flyers, but it's a step in the right direction. Even Kat, who's sitting as far away from me as possible in the corner of the living room, isn't sneering as she and Nev talk to Quinn. She still hates being in second squad, but at least she's civil about it to everyone but me. We've fallen into a routine over the last couple of weeks of November, now the first week of December, adjusting our formation to include the flyers, attending classes together within our years, and even making it through our first sparring session where no one spilled blood yesterday. Rhiannon laid down the law last week, and now we run together every morning and sit together at battle brief and meals. She even assigned us study partners, hoping that proximity might lead to mutual understanding, or at least tolerance. Thank God's Marin is my study partner, but I still feel shitty that Ree took on Kat to spare me. Any chance you speak old Lucerish? I ask Arik at the end of the table. His tutoring would only be second to mine, considering Markham was my mentor. I'd feel better if someone else quadruple-checked the translation, someone other than rule-following Dane, but I'm pretty sure we have it. Otherwise, why would we be here? Absolutely not. He shakes his head and focuses on his new ink pen, his forehead lined with concentration. All of our first years are channeling, and though they have yet to manifest a signet, they have a bet going about who will be able to master the lesser magic needed to work the writing implement first. pretty sure Kai, the lone first-year flyer without Luella, is going to beat them all. He's currently on the couch between a couple of first-years, his spiky black hair bobbing, a dimple forming in his bronze cheek as he laughs at whatever story Bragan, the drift leader and our new XO, is currently telling. Other than Marin, Bragan is the easiest of the flyers to get along with. He also spends a lot of time shooting longing looks Kat's way.
Why would Arik speak Old Lucerish?
Vissia asks from the opposite end of the table, looking up from her physics homework.
Aren't you from Kaldir?
My face freezes. Fuck, I need to be more careful. Yep, Arik looks up at me, his features a perfect, polished mask.
You have me confused with Lynx. He's from Lucerys.
Right, of course. I nod, thankful for his quick cover. At some point, you're going to have to actually get to know the first years. They're people now, Riddick teases, his smile tight. He agrees with us about what we're about to do, but he's understandably worried about the flyer's reactions.
Can't blame her,
Imogen says, carrying a mug out of the kitchen with Marin following close behind. We've added 6 first years and 6 flyers to the squad in the last 6 weeks.
We've been in the squad since July, Vissia argues.
You didn't count before threshing,
Imogen shrugs, glancing across the room.
Guess I'll go save Quinn from Kat.
No blood on my sister's floor,
Rhiannon shoots her a look that says she means it.
Yes, mother,
Imogen mock salutes with her empty hand, then heads toward Quinn.
Marin takes the seat next to me. And Rhiannon lifts her brows at me in subtle question.
My throat tightens. Here we go. This is the whole reason we planned tonight's get-together, so why am I suddenly anxious?
Because I haven't discussed my decision with Zayden. Not that he's been around more than one day a week since he and Brennan decided to reorganize how the combat squads operate.
You're doing the right thing, and Darna says.
The honorable thing.
Taryn chimes in.
Do it, I say to Rhiannon, gripping my mug with both hands.
Listen up,
Rhi calls out as she stands, quieting the house, her gaze touching on every cadet.
For riders, squads are more than a unit. We're family. In order to survive, we have to trust each other on the battlefield and off it. And we're trusting you to do with this information what you will.
She looks to me. What we're about to do is borderline treason. But I can't imagine doing this any other way. I take a steadying breath.
I've been translating Warwick's journal. One of the first 6 who built Besgaeth's wards.
I clarify just in case they're not familiar with our history.
In the hopes that we can get the wards up in Aracia before the approaching Wyvern decide we're the next target. And I think I know how to do it. But that's why we wanted to talk to you, because it will mean you flyers wouldn't be able to wield.
The flyers stare, stunned. Even Kat's eyes flare wide with what almost looks like fear.
We know 2 other Paromish towns have fallen in the last 2 weeks, leaving Draithis vulnerable, and the Assembly wants the wards up and functional now,
Rhiannon continues,
which we think you deserve to know.
Know what?
Kat stands, her chair screeching against the hardwood floor. That you're about to kill our ability to channel. Our griffins are still struggling to adjust to altitude, and now you're going to make us powerless.
Protective wards were our goal long before you came here.
Imogen pushes off the wall and casually sets her hands on her hip, near her favorite dagger, angling her body toward Kat, and Quinn sidesteps to flank the angry flyer.
But we're here now, Kat retorts. If my uncle had known you would tie a hand behind our back, he never would have made that deal.
Control yourself, Kat.
Bragan keeps his tone level, but his brown eyes are sharp as he stands, putting his left arm out to block Kat from advancing on us.
How long until they're up? He asks me. As soon as I tell the assembly what I've found. As of this morning, the stone has a distinct hum, a vibration in that chamber that reminds me of the way Zayden described the armory at Samara, housing the alloy-hilted daggers.
And when are you doing that? Kat snaps. If you weren't here, it would be done already.
I retort in the same tone she's giving. No doubt the majority of the assembly will condemn me as a traitor for this. And maybe they'll be right.
But you are here. You do matter.
Maren shifts in her seat beside me, and though I refuse to slip my hand toward my daggers, Riddick doesn't hesitate, folding his arms to give him quick access to the sheath along his shoulder.
And how long are you giving us?
Bragan asks me, tilting his chin and exposing the vertical silver scars down his neck that disappear into his collar. Every gaze shifts in my direction.
I won't lie to Zayden. The moment he's home, I'll have to tell him,
I admit. Multiple curses ripple through the flyers.
But I'll also tell him that I think we should hold off as long as possible to give you a chance to decide if you still want to stay, knowing you won't be able to channel. And you honestly think he'll listen to you?
Kat's hands curl at her sides.
The good, the bad, the unforgivable.
That's what he said to me when he put my safety above the best interest of the movement. And he may want the wards up because I'm here and he isn't, but he also has a province to think of.
No, I shake my head slowly. I think he'll act in the best interest of Tirindor.
I leave myself out of the equation and want them up as soon as possible, but I can still try.
We're no good to our people if we can't channel, Maren says, looking past Arik to the window and drumming her fingers on the table.
Yeah, well, you're no good to them if you're dead either, Imogen counters, keeping an eye on Kat. And by not raising those wards right now, we're exposing all of Aracia, the riots, the drifts, hell, all of Tirindor beyond Navarre's wards to danger. That's no longer necessary. So you'd better decide if you're willing to stay, knowing that it can happen at any moment, or if you're better off taking shelter in Cordon, where you'll have power and dark wielders.
I don't envy them the choice, but at least we gave it to them. And if you stay, we won't leave you powerless.
I reach under the table and retrieve my pack, then set the black leather bag on the table and unbutton the top.
Turns out alloy isn't the only thing we can imbue.
I take out the 6 conduits Felix gave me yesterday after I trusted him with the truth, each containing an arrowhead like the ones I've been imbuing for weeks.
What's in that?
Bragan asks, 2 lines etched between his brows.
The kind of ore we don't use to make the alloy. It's not quite as rare as taladium, but it's about 10 times as explosive.
Trust me, I've seen this stuff blow sky high raw, let alone imbued. I glance at Sloane, who slowly smiles before she responds.
Mayor sight.
I'm suspended again over that sunburned field, the death wave a heartbeat from overtaking me once the sage releases me from his hold, and he will. He does it every time. I recognize the scenario for what it is now, a recurring nightmare, and yet I'm still held powerless, still too slow to reach Tarn, still can't force my consciousness to snap me awake.
I grow weary of this. Now, wield, the sage whispers, his robes purple tonight. Rip free, show me the power you use to slay our forces above the trading post. Prove me right that you are a weapon worth watching, worth retrieving.
His hand hovers over mine, but doesn't touch me.
The one who watched thinks he'll never yield. That we should kill you before you grow into your full abilities.
My stomach turns, my mouth watering with nausea, as the bony hand drifts upward, pausing at my neck.
Usually, jealousy sways the tongue of young wielders,
He drags a single long fingernail down my throat, exposing an expanse of tan arm under his robes, and I twitch, fear accelerating my heartbeat. I force my mouth to open, but no sound comes out. Touching me is new. Touching me is terrifying.
"The rest turn for the power,"
he whispers, coming so close I can smell a hint of something sweet on his breath.
"But you will turn for something much more dangerous, much more volatile."
He wraps his hand around my throat loosely. I manage to shake my head in denial.
"You will."
His dark, eyelashless eyes narrow, and the jagged fingernails slice into my skin with an all-too-real bite of pain.
"You'll tear down the wards yourself when the time comes."
The temperature plummets, and my next exhale is visible in the frozen air. I blink and snow covers the ground. The only warmth is a quick, cooling trickle along my neck.
"And you won't do it for something as trite as power, or as easily satiable as greed,"
he promises in a whisper.
"But for the most illogical of mortal emotions, love. Or you'll die," he shrugs. "You both will."
He flicks his wrist, and a bone-jarring crack tears me from my sleep. I jolt upright in bed, reaching for my throat and gulping lungful after lungful of air, but there's no cut, no ache, and when I turn the mage light on with lesser magic and a twist of my hand, I see there's no blood either.
"Of course there isn't,"
I whisper aloud, the raw sound cutting through the silence of my bedroom as the first hints of sunlight lighten the sky to purple beyond my window. "It's just a fucking nightmare. There's nothing that can touch me here. Zayden asleep beside me."
"Stop talking to yourself,"
Taren grumbles as though I've woken him.
"It makes us both seem unstable."
"Do you see my dreams?"
"I have better things to do than monitor the machinations of your subconscious mind. If a dream bothers you, then leave it. Stop allowing yourself to be tortured like a hatchling and wake yourself like an adult."
He cuts off conversation before I can tell him that human dreams don't always work like that, and the bond dims, a sign that he's already gone back to sleep. So I lie back down, curling my body around Zayden's, and his arm wraps around my back and pulls me closer like it's a reflex. Like this is the way we'll sleep for the next 50 years. I settle in against his warmth and lay my head on his chest, above the most comforting rhythm in the world besides Taren's and Endarna's wing beats. Zayden's heart. 6 days later, there are 6 new names on the death roll. The December snow makes flying absolutely miserable outside the valley, and at Basgaiath, the dragons would simply refuse to train due to discomfort. Theirs, of course, not ours, but we can't afford not to fly at every available opportunity. So here we are in the flight field, waiting for orders, facing off against claw and tail sections for the squad exercises Devera and Trissa have organized.
"You'd think we were in the Barrens. It's so fucking hot in this valley,"
Riddick mutters, unbuttoning his flight jacket to my right.
"And it's only 11.
A bead of sweat races from the hairline at the nape of my neck to the collar of my flight jacket, so it's not like I can disagree with him. Winter flight leathers aren't exactly meant for the Vale. Or the Valley.
"It won't be the second we're in the air,"
Sawyer's eyes briefly narrow, staring ahead of us, where Rhiannon, Bragan, and the other squad leaders meet with Devera and Trissa. "You all right?" I ask quietly so the first years ahead of us can't hear.
"It's for the good of the squad, right?"
Sawyer forces a tight, closed-lipped smile.
"If they can stay and tolerate, knowing we might strip their powers away at any second, I can deal with losing my position as executive officer."
"I want to go with you,"
Andarna says for the 10th time in the last 15 minutes. And I look over my shoulder to see her flexing her claws beside Tern, her talons digging into the earth. Her black scales shine with a green hue this morning, reflecting the grass around her. Maybe it's the result of lingering gold, and breathing fire will steal the last of the shimmer. I have no clue how far they'll want us to fly. I keep my voice as gentle as possible.
Longer than you're capable of, little one, Tern adds.
I made it an hour yesterday, Andarna argues, because that is what she does now. Tern could tell her the grass is green, and she'd eviscerate yet another sheep on it just to change the color. I lift my brows at Tern, who simply huffs, whatever the hell that means.
Trouble in Double Dragonland? Riddick asks, and Kat glances my way from his other side, Marin following suit now that we stand in rows of four.
She wants to fly with us, I answer.
I am flying with you, she insists, digging more than just her physical claws in. And this matter isn't up for debate amongst your human friends. Dragons do not consult humans.
I'm starting to wish I'd protested your right of benefaction when you asked the Empyrean to bond, Tern grumbles.
Good thing you're not the head of my den, then, isn't it?
Coda should have known better, he starts.
What are the other adolescents doing today? I interrupt, hoping to distract her. The last thing I want to do is climb to any altitude she can't handle and have her wing fail.
God, the consequences of such a mistake would be incomprehensible.
The other adolescents are not bonded and do not understand me.
I swear I can feel Tern roll his eyes.
You'd rather risk all the work you've done with your wing to play war than actually...
Shit, what do adolescent dragons do all day anyway?
Play?
I would rather test my wing on a training mission, yes.
Rhiannon and Bragan head back our way, locked in discussion, both gesturing with their hands in motions that look like maneuvers. There's a sheen of excitement in Rhiannon's quick smile, and I find myself mirroring it. She looks happy.
Maybe they're finally going to let us fly farther than a half hour. You know, without making us hike up the cliffs of Draelor after, Riddick remarks.
Gods, I miss flying.
That would be nice, Sawyer agrees, shooting me a teasing smirk. Not all of us get to take a pleasure flight to Cordon, you know.
Hey, that joyride got us a luminary. I glance meaningfully at the sheath at his side, which holds an alloy-hilted dagger. One for one. That was the deal Brennan struck with the Assembly when it came to supplying the drifts, and we've finally made enough to equip every rider in Erasia with multiple daggers.
Listen up, second squad, Rhiannon says, looking over our group. Our mission is simple. You know the summoning runes Trissa has been working on with us?
Even the first years nod. They might not be able to weave runes, but at least they know what they are, which means they're a step ahead of where we were last year.
There are 30 of them hidden within 20 miles along the Western Range. This isn't just a test for us, but for our dragons to sense them.
Can you, Tern growls in response.
Point made.
Winner gets a weekend pass. No training, no homework, no limits.
She glances at Bragan, whose lips twitch into a smile.
We've been given permission to fly wherever we want. If your griffin feels comfortable flying the cliff wall, that means you can go anywhere.
He looks at Kat.
Even Cordon. Though you'd only have a few hours there before you'd have to start the flight back. If you win, of course.
Oh, we're winning, Marin says, shoulder bumping Kat the same way Rhiannon does me.
Good. You want that pass? We'll need to find and close more of those ruined boxes than they do.
She nods back toward claw and tail sections.
They return, Tern says as wing beats fill the sky.
I look up, a slow smile spreading at the sight of Sigale soaring overhead with Crod and eight other dragons, but I only recognize the three bonded to Heaton, Emery, and Sienna.
Zayden's home, with a full riot of 10.
I'm guessing you got your way with the new structure? I ask Zayden as they land behind our line of griffins and dragons. Taryn breaks away, as if we aren't about to be sent on a training mission.
Bragan and I will divide you up into groups of 4 according to your abilities, Rhiannon continues.
In a way, Zayden answers, executing a perfect dismount and walking toward us. My pulse leaps, and the worry that seems to live in my chest lifts a fraction when I don't see any new injuries or blood.
Sorengale, you paying attention?
Rhi calls me out. My head swivels back to the front of formation, where she's arching an eyebrow at me.
Teams of 4, split by ability,
I repeat with a nod, then give her a blatantly beseeching look that absolutely abuses her status as my best friend.
We'll have an hour once we launch, Bragan says.
Go,
Rhi mouths once the squad's attention is on him. I smile in thanks, then step out of formation and walk past Andarna and Fierge over the trampled grass straight to Zayden. The scruff on his jaw is thick with days of growth, and there are circles under his eyes as he reaches forward, surprising me by tugging me against his chest in front of all of Fourth Wing. The cold beard tickles as he buries his icy face in my neck and breathes deeply.
I've missed you.
Same. I wind my arms around his torso, sliding my hands in the space between the swords he wears crossed at his back and his flight jacket. Then, hold tight to help warm him.
I need to talk to you.
Bad news? He pulls back and searches my eyes. No, just news that's best shared when there's time to discuss. His brow knits.
Good to see you, Vi,
Garrick says as he walks by, tapping me on the shoulder.
You definitely need to make him tell you about the Venon he took down just outside Drathus.
You what? My stomach pitches sideways.
Thanks for that, asshole, Zayden glares at Garrick. Just doing my part to help your communication skills thrive in a stable relationship.
Garrick turns and walks backward, lifting his hands in a shrug.
Like you have any room to talk about stable relationships,
Imogen counters from behind him, the squad formation obviously having broken to ready for the mission.
I'm gonna skip the obvious pun to be made about plenty of mares in my stable.
He flashes a grin, then turns and heads toward the path at the end of the valley.
Seeing as I'm no longer a cadet, but a mature, responsible officer.
She scoffs as he walks by.
We need to go, Sorengale.
You took down a Venon?
I pivot, keeping my attention on Zayden.
Outside Drathus?
It's the last Paromish stronghold before the cliffs of Draelor.
You have lengthy news to discuss?
He replies, lifting his brows.
Are you all right?
I slide my hands to his face, scanning him, like that tiny bit of exposed skin will tell me if the other 95% is unharmed. Being able to raise the wards won't mean anything if he isn't safe. At least, it won't mean anything to me.
News? His eyes narrow.
Violet!
Rhiannon calls.
I have to fly out.
I drop my hands reluctantly.
And he catches one in his as I retreat a step. We'll talk when I get back.
Tell me now.
The wing leader voice doesn't work on me.
I squeeze his hand and let go. His eyes flare.
You figured out how to raise the wards.
I blink, then scowl.
I hate it when you do that. Is my face really that easy to read?
To me? Yes.
He looks toward the rocky path that leads down to Ryerson House.
We should go now. How long will it take to raise them?
No. I shake my head and turn toward my squad, seeing Sloane, Vissia, and Kat clearly waiting for me.
Guess I don't need to ask where I've been assigned.
We'll talk about it later. Discussion paused.
At least tell me what was missed the first time.
Zayden quickly catches up to me.
Dragons.
I pat Endarna's foreleg as we approach the trio of waiting cadets.
The 6 most powerful refers to dragons. Not riders.
In that case, I can have them up before you get back.
No, you can't.
I shoot him a glare.
Are you two fighting silently?
Kat asks, glancing between Zayden and me, her perfectly arched brows rising slowly.
They do that, Sloane informs her.
Zayden ignores them both completely, keeping his gaze locked onto mine as we reach them.
And just why can't I?
I lean up and brush my lips over his cool cheek.
Because you'll need Taryn. Now go warm up. I have a mission to fly.
Without another word to him, I turn to my squad mates.
Let's go.
An excerpt from A Study on Signets by Major Dalton Cisneros. The art of imbuing comes naturally to only a handful of signets, and automatically only to one, the siphon. Chapter 53. 40 minutes later, the four of us are hiking down a steep, snow-covered ridgeline to a cave only accessible by foot in the sector our group has been assigned to. And lucky me is in the lead, which leaves Kat at my back. At least Andarna's there to protect it should the flyer get any stabby ideas about how to get me out of Zayden's bed.
This is not what I had in mind when I said I wanted to fly with you,
Andarna huffs at the powdery snow, scattering a portion in a shimmering cloud of frozen misery.
This is what the mission called for, and you need your strength to fly back, I tell her, trudging forward through the knee-high layer of fresh hell and hoping I don't fall through into any older strata.
The only one who isn't struggling is Kirillaire, Kat's silver-winged griffin, who walks at Andarna's side. Only those two are light enough not to cause an avalanche on the non-existent path.
Anything?
Taryn asks as he flies to the next peak, his voice tense.
We haven't even made it to the cave you selected, I respond, spotting the mouth of the cave about 20 yards ahead, only because Taryn pointed it out under the camouflage of the snowy outcropping above.
The riot left us at the only fully stable section of terrain, an outcropping of rock left bare by the vicious wind.
I still find this plan lacking, he lectures, leaving you on one peak to explore another for a possible energy signature leaves you in unacceptable danger.
From whom? I tug my fur-lined hood closer to ward off the wind when it shifts, stinging the tips of my exposed ears.
Do you really think any wyvern could?
I'm coming back.
It's entirely too easy to rile you, I laugh, and the sound echoes off the snow-covered bowl, making us all take pause.
For fuck's sake, Sorengale,
Kat hisses once it's clear the snow around us is staying put.
Are you trying to get us buried in an avalanche? Sorry,
I whisper over my shoulder. Her eyes widen.
Did you just apologize to me?
I can admit when I'm wrong, I shrug and continue forward.
I'm fully present and capable of protecting her,
Andarna snipes at Taryn.
You do not yet breathe fire.
Fire would only serve to melt the mountain,
she reminds him, and I glance back to see her carefully picking her path, her scales reflecting the snow in an almost silvery sheen in places.
I still wield teeth and claw should the aristocrat bear her vitriol.
Are you insinuating that I don't? Kat asks. Do you ever think you're wrong? Ever? I ask, pushing forward. I honestly think you might be worse than a dragon when it comes to confidence.
Arrogance, Andarna corrects me. The flyer doesn't have the skills to back up a word like confidence.
I snort, but bite back the laugh before it can endanger us. 10 more feet, and we'll be at the cave. If Taryn locates a second, while we're retrieving the first, we'll be ahead of Claw Section, who has already found 3 to our section's 2, according to Taryn. Dragons are nothing if not competitive.
What?
Kat asks.
Andarna thinks you're arrogant, not confident, I tell her.
She is, Sloane agrees.
Just because your brother didn't like me doesn't mean you know me,
Kat whispers at Sloane.
No,
I turn to face Kat, making her pause in the footsteps I've carved in the ridgeline.
You want to pick a fight, you come at me.
Kat cocks her head to the side and studies me. Because you feel guilty for her brother's death. It's not an accusation or even a dig, just the truth. Because I promised him I'd take care of her. So you can aim all that hatred right here.
I tap my gloved hand to my chest.
He was wrong to ask that of you.
Sloane catches up, Vissia close behind.
Because Imogen would have been a more capable protector, I ask, only able to hold her too familiar blue gaze for a heartbeat before looking away.
No, because you already carry the weight of protecting Zayden's life. It was unfair of him to burden you with mine, too.
She huffs a breath into her cupped, gloved hands to warm them.
I blink as my eyes sting from something other than the wind, then turn to continue trudging through the snow toward the cave, whose entrance is nothing but a narrow, icy ledge.
It looks bigger than we thought from the air,
but still not wide enough for any dragon bigger than Andarna to squeeze into.
There was a time my kind dwelled in every mountain of this range,
Tarn tells me.
That cave is undoubtedly part of the network of chambers that runs throughout this range for a wintering den. This entrance would have been inhospitable to any approach but direct flight, to protect the young and the adolescent.
I heard that,
Andarna quips.
Kirillair says our squad has another box in hand,
Kat tells us as I finally reach the cave's entrance, stepping out of the wind.
We're so winning that pass,
Vissia grins, and Kat walks out of the snow and onto the rocky floor of the cave.
Does every griffin have Lair in their name?
I ask Kat, hoping the subject change might change the aim of her sharp tongue from Sloane.
Of course not. Is every rider named Sorengale?
She folds her arms and bounces back on her heels like she's trying to stay warm.
That right there is why I don't like you.
Sloane crosses into the cave.
Vissia slips and I lunge forward, catching her hand and tugging her into the cave as snow crumbles where she'd just been standing.
You all right?
I ask, pulling her farther into the cave and scanning her startled face.
Of course she is. You never seem to have a problem saving her,
Kat mutters. I'm fine, Vissia nods, dropping her hood and revealing the dragonfire burn scar down her hairline. That's going to make it hard to leave.
I shoot Kat a withering look, but she's too busy watching her griffin, Kira, stretch across the hole in the path, then safely squirm her way into notice.
Reason number two.
Sloane holds up two fingers and walks past Kat into the dark cave.
Needless to say, there are no mage lights in here.
And I've never been that good at producing them. Anything I wield with lesser magic is going to be swallowed up in this darkness. I rest my hand over my stomach, as if that will help the instant rise of nausea from the smell of earth around us. At least it's missing that damp scent from the interrogation chamber, but it's close enough to make me pause.
You ended the one who kept you prisoner,
Andarna reminds me, following Kira in, tucking her wings tight to fit through the opening.
Fear isn't always logical, I glance at the other riders.
Any chance either of you is a fire wielder?
Because I don't think you want me wielding in here. Keeping the energy strung between my hand and the conduit for 15 feet puts me into a sweat every time, and I can only keep it going for a few seconds.
No signet yet,
Vissia responds.
Me either,
Sloane answers, peering into the darkness.
You brought a dragon, Kat gestures wide, motioning toward Andarna.
She can't breathe fire yet, I offer Andarna a smile.
But she will. Remind her that I can sever her head with one bite,
Andarna growls, the sound higher than Tarn's menacing rumble.
I will not.
What does Tarn tell us?
We don't eat our allies, she mumbles, but there's a distinct tap of her talons against the rock floor. Great. Why they stuck me with you three, I'll never know. You'd think one of us would have a good mage light down.
Kat removes her bow, then swings her pack from her back and rummages past the full quiver to pull out a small, unlit torch.
Are you kidding me?
I gawk as she brings a piece of wood no larger than my palm from the bag, shakes her head, and reaches for another.
You carry one of those around with you?
Obviously. Kat digs into her bag again.
The fact that you don't says that you haven't been appropriately scared of the dark yet.
Shit, I can't find the fire rune Marin made.
You all trade runes?
Vissia stares in open shock.
And you call yourselves a family.
Of course we share.
Whoever can make it does. Then we all trade so everyone is equally equipped.
Kat shakes her head and stands, muttering a curse.
I can't find it.
That's brilliant, I admit. Why didn't you tell us?
You're used to hoarding power, she says with a dismissive shrug, not sharing it. Now, unless someone has an idea for fire.
Got it. I yank off my gloves, then stuff them into one pocket and pull my conduit from the other, beckoning a trickle of my power to rise. It tingles, then burns as it flows down my hand, through my fingers, and into the conduit. The tendrils of energy light our immediate surroundings.
That's so awesome, Vissia smiles. Can all of you do that?
No, it just hums for most of us. Glad to see you'll have all the light you need. Sarcasm drips from Kat's voice.
Take it, I order Sloane.
I'd rather live, she puts her hands up.
If I thought it was going to kill you, I'd hand it to Kat.
I hold the conduit out to her. Kat snorts, but I think there was a note of laughter there.
Good point.
Sloane takes the conduit, and I concentrate on keeping the energy connected.
Back up 3 steps.
Good, another 2. I tell her, and my fingers tremble as she does, stretching my signet.
Wow,
Vissia whispers.
Stick the torch into the energy, Kat.
You think it's safe? She asks.
I have no clue, but I'm game to try if you are.
I keep focused on the conduit, on the flow of energy, on the heat I keep checked by controlling the door to Tarn's power.
Kira clicks her tongue in a series of sounds I've become accustomed to, but have no hope of ever understanding.
Fine, I'll do it, Kat mutters, then lowers the torch until it catches fire.
I immediately drop my hand, cutting off the power, and I send a prayer of thanks to Dune that it worked. Felix is probably going to have my head on a pike tomorrow at lessons.
I'll take it. Thanks, Sloane. Sloane hands the conduit back, like it might explode.
Damn,
Kat says, glancing from the torch to the conduit to me.
I hate that you're so
badass, Sloane suggests, smiling in a way that reminds me of her brother.
Powerful,
Kat admits, looking away before slipping her pack back on, changing hands with the torch instead of passing it off.
It's not the power making that possible, I tell her, channeling into the conduit so it lights up again and marching into the darkness.
It's the control.
Yeah, well, I kind of loathe that too,
she mutters, catching up to walk at my side.
A rare moment of honesty. I'll take it.
We move into the cave, which seems to widen with every step we take.
They paired us because I'm supposedly the most powerful rider in the squad, I tell her, ignoring her muttered response.
But you're better at runes. We might not complement each other, but we complement each other. I smile despite the darkness we're walking into.
Get it? With an E instead of the I?
Kat looks at me like I've just grown a third arm, and the torch starts to flicker. There's a breeze.
Are you telling scribe jokes?
Sloane asks, a couple of steps behind us, Vissia at her side.
Jacinia would think it's funny,
Vissia offers like she's trying to save me.
Jacinia is a scribe,
Sloane notes.
The cave opens up about 20 feet in, a vast tunnel forking to the left.
Apparently, there's a much easier way to get into this cave,
Kat mutters. It's part of a network that runs through this range, I explain.
Should we split up? Vissia asks.
No, all three of us respond at the same time.
Which way do we go?
Sloane voices the question we're all wondering. No one answers. Any help? I ask Taryn, feeling our bond stretch. He's not far, but definitely not close either.
There's an energy signature in that cave, that's all I can tell.
I vote right, and if it doesn't work, we'll come back and go left.
I look to the others. Kat nods, and we head farther in.
So, do you think you'll get a second signet? Vissia asks, breaking the silence. Two dragons, two signets, right?
I don't know, I answer, glancing back at Andarna. I actually figured because she bonded me so young and lost the ability to stop time, the signet of lightning wielding was all that I would be blessed with. But now I wonder. Will I?
Why are you asking me? Signets manifest according to the person wielding.
Her eyes blink gold, her black scales blending in with the darkness.
Second signets only happen when a dragon bonds a rider in the direct familial line as its previous, Sloane says, misunderstanding Vissia's question. But there's an equal chance of it causing madness, from what Thort told me. That's why Kruth wasn't punished for bonding Quinn. She's only the great niece of her previous rider. Her signet's more powerful, but not entirely different.
Thort shouldn't be telling you matters resolved within the Empyrean. Vissia lectures, then does a double take when she glances my way. Gravity shifts. That can't be right. That would mean... Violet, are you okay? Vissia asks. I shake my head but say, yes. How do you explain your heart is sinking past the rock floor of the cave? I take a deep breath, flex and unflex my hand as I grip the brightly glowing conduit. Andarna growls to my right, and I quickly assure her, I'm fine. But we both know I'm anything but fine. I'm also equally certain now isn't the time to let my mind wander down that path.
Holy shit, there it is, Sloane says, forcing me to pay attention as she walks past us to pick up the plain metal chest that's locked into an open position by the rune on the front.
It's plain. Vissia notes.
Are you going to counter the summoning rune? I ask Kath. When she raises one brow, I add, you're better at runes, remember?
I am, she nods a genuine smile, curving her mouth for the first time since I met her. I just wanted to see if you'd say it again.
Kirillaire's wing brushes my shoulder as she walks past us into the darkness, as if Kat needs to be guarded from the unseen. Kat glances between the three of us with an uncertain and unhappy tense set to her mouth, then hands the torch to Vissia in what looks like a painful sacrifice.
No, not a sacrifice, a gesture of trust. She weaves the unlocking rune with a speed I envy, her hands moving quickly, confidently, as Andarna shifts her weight behind me. What's wrong?
The scent of others grows stronger.
Wyvern? Every muscle in my body clenches.
No, they smell of stolen magic when you get close enough.
She lifts her head, taking up three quarters of the tunnel.
This smells of dragons.
Got it, Kat says, and I turn at the sound of metal clicking shut. The chest is closed and latched. We'd better hurry, I tell them. Andarna smells other dragons, which means the other sections might be closing in on us.
I'm not losing this pass, Vissia trades Kat, taking the chest and returning the torch. It will give me time to fly home and convince my cousins to leave the border if my aunt and uncle won't.
You're going to fly into Navarre? Sloane damn near shouts.
It's right on the border. They won't even know. Vissia adjusts her grip on the chest and hurries past Andarna. So let's get out of here.
Bold choice to go back to Navarre. Kat jogs to catch up to Vissia, lighting the way.
I respect it.
The effort, the consideration for Vissia, thaws a small chunk of my heart toward Kat. Maybe she's not horrible to everyone, just me.
It's the only thing to do, Vissia starts as we approach the fork in the tunnel. A low growl vibrates the very ground beneath our feet, making all four of us halt, and the hair rises on the back of my neck. What the? Cat starts. Another growl makes the pebbles around my feet bounce, and a full-grown orange dragon comes around the corner, its back scraping the top of the cave as it snaps its head our direction, glaring at us through its only remaining eye.
Oh, fuck,
Vissia shrieks. Tern! I mentally scream, forcing my body past the shock, the fear, the nauseating hopelessness of our situation. The orb falls from my hand, shattering on the ground at the same moment I reach for the women in front of me. But my hand only grasps the leather of Cat's pack. I yank her backward with all my strength, just as Vissia is swatted out of the way by a sharp, jagged claw. Cat's body collides with mine, knocking us both to the ground, and the torch falls from her hand as Vissia hits the side of the cave with a cracking sound that sickens my stomach. The angle, the impact. Gods, she's dead.
Silver One,
Tern's voice roars in my head as the dragon blocking our way out focuses his narrowed eye on me and opens his jaw wide. Fetid breath fills the air a second before he curls his tongue and his throat glows orange with rising fire.
Solas found us!
An excerpt from Colonel Kaori's Field Guide to Dragonkind. I'll say one thing for dragonfire. It kills quickly. Chapter 54.
A dark shape flies at us from the left, sweeping Cat and me into a spinning tangle of limbs and propelling us backward. I grab onto her in the chaos, forcing her body in front of mine as we come to a skidding halt, knowing the shelter of facing my back to Solas won't be enough, but trying anyway.
She has to live. She's third in line to the throne of Poromiel. If she dies in Tirindor, Cordon will hunt Zayden down and execute him. If he survives my death... Survive, survive, survive.
I push the demand down every mental bond I have just in case we aren't out of range. Zayden's too far, but Tern will hear it. And Endarna, gods, Tern has to get here in time to save her. Kirillaire and Sloane fly into us next, swept in by an unseen force, pushing Sloane and me backward towards Solas, but my back hits a hard, rough surface as the cave walls illuminate with the eerie glow of impending fire from a heartbeat before we're overtaken by darkness.
Take a breath, Endarna demands. Don't argue!
Not darkness, wings. It's her belly at my back, and she's wrapped her wings around us.
Breathe in and hold it, I shout, then fill my lungs with sulfur-scented air.
Heat blasts, roaring past us in a stream that shakes Endarna's wings, and the temperature soars. I force my eyes closed to keep them from cooking as my skin burns, as though we've been thrown into an oven. How can she survive this?
She's fireproof, Tern reminds me, but the panic in his voice doesn't do much to soothe the terror clamping down on my heart.
Do not breathe, Endarna demands, and I know it's because I'll singe my lungs if I do, if any of us do. I count my heartbeats. 1, 2, 3.
The blast feels like it goes on forever, like it becomes my eternity, like my soul has done exactly what Sloane asked in the first part of the year and gone straight to the depths of hell without being commended to Malik.
8, 9. On 10, it ends, and Endarna's wings fall. Air rushes in, and I wait until I feel its cool brush across my cheek before I drag in a breath, hearing the others do the same.
I open my eyes and see Cat lunge in the torchlight across the small space, using her gloved hands to put out the burning tips of the feathers along Kira's far wing.
It must have been exposed to the flames.
Sloane races to help as Endarna gains her feet, and I narrowly avoid her tail as she faces down Solas.
No, he's nearly twice as big as you are.
I lift my hands and throw the floodgates open on Tern's power, letting it burn through me as Solas's blast failed to do, until I'm pure fire. But I can't wield in here, not when there's every chance I could hit one of us.
And Darna's roar fills the cave, and my heart stops when she goes for Solas's throat.
He bats her away like she's nothing but a nuisance, and I muffle a cry as she slides into the wall right over the charred remains of Vissia's bones.
I'm fine, and Darna shakes it off as Solas sizes me up.
3 minutes, Terran tells me. You will not die today.
3 minutes. We can make it 3 minutes, but time isn't our issue. Terran can't fit through the opening of the cave. He'll have to find whatever entrance Solas used.
How the fuck do you kill a dragon?
Let me go, Kat shouts. You're draining my power.
What the fuck? I chance a look backward, but all I see is Kat disengaging from Sloane's panicked grip.
Go for his other eye.
Get out of the way, I order Andarna, and this time she listens, scrambling back to my side as I grab 2 knives from their sheaths and flip them, pinching at the tips for a heartbeat before loosing them. The first misses as he swivels, but the second finds the mark. His bellow of pain is followed by rage, and he stumbles backward into the forked tunnel, leaving a small, precious opening between his head and the wall. Kat and Sloane are closer. They can make it.
Get her out, I yell at Kat. Now! Violet!
Sloane shouts, but Kira's beak closes softly around her pack, and she hoists her into the air as Kat scrambles to mount. They rush by on the left, making it through just before Solas's claws come out swinging, his talons raking furrows into the stone of the cave. I hit the floor, pain flaring up my shoulders. There's no pop as talons swipe over us, but something bites into my palm. Glass from the conduit. I spread my bleeding fingers wide in the dim light of the dying torch, locating the remnants before it goes out. The top of the metal joint has broken, leaving 4 jagged prongs and 1 secured piece of alloy.
I don't have fire, Andarna tells me, following my thoughts,
but I have power.
It's about to get really dark in here. It's our only shot, and I'm taking it. You have to run as soon as there's an opening.
I'm not leaving you, she stubbornly argues.
1 minute, Terran announces.
How the hell am I going to get close enough to stab the remains of the conduit into him? There's no time to tie it to a dagger, and the force of a throw isn't enough to...
Solas roars in pain, his head swiveling back toward his shoulder, and through the opening I see Kat poised in the dim light, knocking another arrow.
There's no time to ruminate on her sticking around to save me. I'm already moving, grabbing hold of the dying torch in my empty hand, then running toward the soft spot under Solas's foreleg, where his scales separate a few inches at a time to allow the movement of the joint.
He roars again, fire illuminating the cave in a short blast as he aims without sight, hitting the wall in front of him instead of Kat.
I race into the deadly space underneath him and change my target when I realize he'll crush me if he falls, charging toward his right shoulder.
I shove the prongs of the conduit into the soft joint between his scales as Andarna sinks her teeth between his neck and shoulder, distracting him, and then I wield.
Energy sizzles up my arm and into my fingertips, where they meet the metal.
Control. This is all about control.
With 1 hand raised, wielding the delicate strain of energy, I back away from Solas as quickly as I dare, feeding more and more power into the stream, and then I pour everything.
Solas roars, swinging his hind end around. A shape comes swinging for me, and I make out the thicker part of his tail in the dim light a second before it slams into my stomach, sending me flying and breaking the stream of lightning. I'm airborne, nothing more than a projectile as I fly backward, hitting my ass, then my back, and lastly, my head against the ground with a crack. But I hold my power tight instead of striking, letting it burn me from the inside out. Better me than accidentally hitting Andarna. The only sound is a loud ringing in my ears, and sight only comes in quick, flashing blasts. Fire. It flares as I struggle to sit up through the fog of my own heartbeat, revealing Andarna latched onto Solas, hanging on even as he thrashes, slamming her smaller body against the cave wall.
No! I think I yell, but the incessant peal of bells in my head blocks it out, and suddenly I'm moving, being dragged backward by a pair of arms. My head falls back, and I recognize those eyes.
Liam! I must be dead!
She's not clear,
someone shouts as the ringing fades slightly, and then another blast of fire shows 2 more arrows in the bloodied hole that used to be Solas's shoulder.
Kat, she's beside me, already drawing another arrow, and her lips move silently. And the eyes above me aren't Liam's. They're Sloane's.
We're plunged back into darkness momentarily, and the ringing fades enough to hear Kat's voice clearly.
90, 100. 101.
Her voice shakes.
Light flares again, and I'm dragged backward, and Cat fires, hitting Solas in the same wound. And Darna flies free, taking a chunk of Solas with her as I'm hauled from the returning darkness into the growing light from the mouth of the cave. And Darna! I claw at Sloane's grip, but the harder I fight, the weaker I feel. And the insufferable heat of my power lessens as Sloane starts to scream, letting me fall to the ground.
Silver One!
I feel the steady beats of air at my back and know Tarn is there, hovering. But I can't rip my eyes away from the darkness of the cave as I stumble to my feet near the entrance. A dragon screams, then falls horrifyingly silent.
She isn't. She can't be.
She lives, Tarn promises.
But I don't breathe until I reach mentally and find my bond with Endarna gleaming and strong.
I drained you, Sloane holds up trembling hands, staring at them like they don't belong to her. I drained you, she grasps my shoulders, yanking my focus from the dark as my head swims. For fuck's sake, Sloane, give her a second. She just hit her head. Cat barks, still aiming into the darkness as we stand in the glaring light, but not firing an arrow without a target. Are my eyes red? Sloane shakes me. Or maybe she's shaking and simply holding on to me. Are they red? I swear I didn't reach violet. I didn't take anything from you on purpose. Oh gods, am I turning venom?
She is as Naolin was, Tarn says.
You're not turning. I take her hands from my shoulders and stare into the darkness as footsteps sound, talons clicking along the rock.
I'm not?
Your signet manifested, I whisper, my eyes straining to see into the cave opening. You're a siphon.
And Darna walks into the light, but it's not the blood covering her mouth that catches my attention. It's the blood dripping from the poisoned barb on her tail.
You killed him. My shoulders dip in relief. You killed Solas.
Pride and worry assault me at the same time, but I can't force my shields up before Tarn's voice fills my very existence.
Slayer.
Zayden bursts into our room as the healer finishes checking my eyes, shading my vision, then exposing me to light.
Violet!
He halts a few feet away from where I sit on the edge of our bed.
Cat, what the hell are you doing in here?
She saved my life. Making sure she was seen by a healer was the least I could do, Cat answers.
She what?
Zayden moves forward as the healer stands upright.
You heard me. She put herself between the giant orange dragon and me.
She rises from her seat, the same chair Zayden sat in while I slept in here for days after Resin, poisoned by the Venon's blade.
Thank you, Sorengale.
She chokes on the words a little before passing by Zayden on her way out.
Solas, I start to explain.
Oh, I already know. He seethes. Sigale told me.
You were in a meeting. I didn't want to bother you. I follow the healer's finger upon direction.
Bother me?
Shadows flood the floor. The healer notices, blinking quickly.
You'll be all right. I don't think you're concussed, but that's quite a lump on the back of your head. And I'll ask that you mind the stitches in your hand.
She arches a silver brow at me.
Of course. I lift my wrapped left hand.
Thank you. She nods, then dismisses herself, disappearing into the hallway. I stare at Zayden, and he stares right back, tension emanating from every line of his body.
If you want to fight about the wards, that's fine. But I'm not taking the blame for fighting my way out of a cave.
He stalks forward, then bends down into my space and kisses me, soft and slow.
You're alive,
he whispers against my lips.
So my heartbeat says.
Good.
He stands folding his arms. Now we can fight.
What the fuck were you thinking, saving Cat?
I blink.
I'm sorry. You're mad at me? I fight my way out of a cave against a dragon, and you're mad at me? For saving a woman in the line of succession to the throne of Poromiel?
He reels backward, horror flashing into his eyes a second before anger swamps them. You saved Kat because she's third in line?
First, I would have fought to save anyone.
You selfless, reckless, he accuses, backing away slowly.
And second, her death would have triggered yours, so hell yes, I saved her.
My feet hit the ground, and my head swims for a heartbeat, but my pulse steadies as I breathe deeply.
Takaris would have had you executed if she'd died under your care.
Unfucking believable. He laces his hands on the top of his head. You hate her. And yet, you refuse to raise the wards, no doubt, so her power won't be stripped away. And then you put your life in front of hers. For you! All I want is you!
He flicks his hands, and shadows shut the door a little harder than necessary, sealing us in behind the sound shield.
If she dies, then I'll take the consequences. If they can't channel, I'll take those consequences too. But not you. Never you. God's Violet. I'm doing everything in my power to both respect your freedom and keep you safe. And you're...
He shakes his head. I don't even know what you're doing.
Keep me safe. I laugh, sarcasm biting into my eyes and making them sting. Is that what you do? I get it all mixed up with just not killing me.
There it is. He retreats until his back hits the wall, and then he folds his arms and leans against it, crossing an ankle casually.
You finally ready to ask me about the deal I made with your mother?
An excerpt from The Journal of Warwick of Luceris, translated by cadets Violet Sorengale and Dane Atos. Nothing kills powerful, unshakable love faster than opposing ideologies. Chapter 55.
My mouth opens, then shuts. You knew that I knew?
Of course I knew.
He arches a dark brow, as if I'm the problem here.
I've just been waiting for you to work up the courage, the trust, whatever you want to call it, to fucking ask me.
My hands fist at my sides, and I shove my power back behind the archive's door and slam my shields up. Without a conduit, there's every chance I'll set the curtains on fire for the entirely wrong reason.
You let me stew in it for months? You didn't ask me.
He pushes off the wall but stops himself from taking more than a step.
I've been begging you for months to ask me what you want to know, to break down that last insurmountable wall you're keeping between us, but you didn't. Why?
He has the nerve to put this on me?
You're the one who said you'd never be entirely truthful with me. How am I supposed to know what you will and will not answer? How am I supposed to know what there is to ask?
The second you have a question, you ask it. Seems pretty simple.
Simple? Brennan is alive. You made a deal with my mother for my life. She put those scars on your back. Tell me, Zayden, is it only the secrets about my family you want me to dig out of you? You holding anything about Mira?
Shit. He shoves a hand through his hair. I didn't want you to know about the scars, that's true. But I would have told you if you'd asked.
I asked last year, I challenge, walking toward the windows to look out over the rebuilt city, my anger heating my blood.
But not my skin yet, thank the gods.
I'm sorry, I can't change last year. And though you've said you understand why I kept you in the dark, I don't think you've actually forgiven me.
Have I? Wrapping my arms around myself, I watch a riot of 10 fly overhead, my mind racing with the deal he made. With him knowing, him testing me with his ridiculous questions. And he still hasn't told me everything about the scars on his back or what I suspect from the cave about Sigale bonding him. How much more can there be?
As for the scars, I said you didn't want to know how I got them. You can't honestly tell me that you're happy knowing, are you?
My stomach twists.
Of course not, I spin to face him. She cut into you over and over.
I shake my head, truly unable to fathom her actions, let alone how he endured it.
Yes, he nods, as if it's just a fact, a piece of history. and I didn't offer the information because I knew you'd find some way to blame yourself, just like you've assumed guilt for everything that's gone wrong in the last few months. I stiffen. I have not. You have. He walks forward, stopping at the edge of the bed. And the scars on my back are not your fault. Yes, your life was the unnamed price for the marked ones entering the quadrant. He shrugs. Your mother called in her favor, and I gave it. Do you want me to apologize for a deal I made before I knew you, before I loved you? A deal that kept us alive, started the flow of weaponry to the flyers? Because I won't. I'm not sorry.
I'm not mad about the deal.
How does he not understand?
I'm pissed that you kept it from me, that you insist on making me ask for things you should openly share. How the hell am I in love with you when I feel like I barely know you sometimes?
Because I let you live long enough for us to fall in love, he says. Without that deal, gods know what I would have done in my need for revenge. Ask me why I don't regret it. Ask me about the first time I saw you. Ask me about the moment I almost killed you despite the deal and decided not to. Ask me why. Ask me something. Fight back like you would have done last year before I broke your trust. Stop being so scared of the answers or waiting for me to give them to you. Demand the truth. I need you to love all of me, not just what you decide to see. How are we still having the same fight 5 months later?
I shake my head. He can tell me or he can choose not to, but I'm done having to guess which questions to ask.
Because it wasn't just me who shattered your trust last year. Because you were too pissed about my refusal to answer the superficial questions about the revolution to ask the real ones about us. Because you didn't have a chance to find your feet before you were tortured. Because I came for you, told you that I love you, and you decided you could admit to loving me, even be with me, but we skipped over the step where you admit to fully trusting me. Take your pick. It's like we're still on that parapet last year, and I'm not the one worried you'll find something unlikable if you dig a little deeper. You are.
That's bullshit, I shake my head. And how am I supposed to fully trust you when battle axes are flying out of armoires left and right?
He lifts his scarred brow. I'm not sure I understand.
It was an analogy I used with Imogen, never mind.
I wave him off. About battle axes and armoires? His head tilts as he studies me. I rub the center of my forehead.
I basically said that if a battle axe came flying out of an armoire and almost killed you, you'd want to check out the armoire to make sure it wouldn't happen again.
He glances out of the corner of his eye to where our uniforms hang side by side, and his brow furrows in thought. I can work with this.
I'm sorry?
What's in our armoire right now? He crosses his arms over his chest.
My mouth opens, shuts, then opens again.
Uniforms, boots, flight leathers? How many uniforms? Which pairs of boots?
Shadows curl along the floor, stretching from beneath our bed to the armoire doors.
Do you actually know what's in there? Or do you just trust that I haven't moved your belongings and everything's where you left it?
It's an analogy.
This is ridiculous.
And I open that armoire every single day. I know where things hang because I see them.
What about the blanket my mother made me that's tucked back on the top shelf?
Two strands of shadow reach for handles and open the armoire doors.